Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Russiagate is back with a vengeance. The third season of This Delusion has premiered and viewing is mandatory. Also, with Russia again at the center of the current election cycle, how is or should Russia react? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He is deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. The original Russiagate originated in around the 2016 election. We had the second iteration with the 2020 election, and now we have 2024. We have Russiagate 3.0. I'm fully aware that we could parse it and say 2018 and 2022. Fine, but there are three major elements now in play. Like I said, this third season has premiered. Viewership wasn't too great in the first two iterations, but I guess they found the funds to continue it. Joking aside, George, you're not surprised this is happening, George.
No, I'm not surprised, Peter, because we were obviously expecting this. I was surprised that it came as early as this. This is early September. And so one has to think that there are concerns about the Harris campaign and its viability, that they had to bring out the big guns as early as this. But the Russiagate keeps appearing again and again and again because the original perpetrators and continuing perpetrators have never been punished. They've been held to account. And so the same people keep coming forward with the same absurd arguments. And as you've said many times before, Peter, that there are very few Russians in Russiagate. And you know, when it was first thrown at us about, oh, the Russians are interfering in the 2016 election and they want to get Trump elected. And then, you know, the more we learned, the more we found out that this was actually a deep state operation in order to discredit Trump, in order to set up figures within the Trump campaign, such as Carter Page and Paul Manafort and George Papadopoulos, and then use that in order to destroy Trump. And something's very similar happened in Russiagate 2.0. Now, here we have an apparent claim that RT has been funneling a huge amount of money to various internet.
Huge amount of money.
$10 million, which is, you know, it's not an insignificant sum, but to internet influencers. But this is just simply a DOJ claim. This is a claim made by Merrick Garland, Lisa Monaco, the FBI, CIA, all of the usual characters who are basically asserting this. No evidence is presented. And the proof of this is if they really wanted to present a case that RT, this supposedly malevolent organization, is engaged in an information warfare, which is what they're saying, then indict RT. You know, bring your case. But they haven't done that. You know, that's very, very. You know, they've taken two individuals. They know perfectly well they're never going to have to spend any time in court. They're outside the U.S. jurisdiction. It's never going to happen. But they're very careful not to make the mistake that Mueller made, if you remember, when he indicted Concord Management, the corporation, is that once you indict the corporation, go in with the legal representatives. Now you have to put up or shut up. You have to present the case. And of course, Mueller couldn't present the case, so they moved to dismiss the case. So something similar is happening here. If they really have the evidence that RT was acting in this malevolent way, waging this information warfare against the United States, then bring your case, bring your evidence.
Well, they haven't done it. I don't think it's going to go much further than this, the breaking news that we had a few days. It's just to make an effect. Dima, I mean, RT is banned in the United States. It's banned in the European Union. I mean, RT is the a problem that they don't have to contend with as they define Russian media and its potential influence. I mean, we also have the issue of Iran claims that Iran is influencing the campaign. There was this bizarre story about an assassination plan possibly coming out of Iran. And then we have real foreign influence, like the AIPAC and the Israeli lobby. They are knocking off of Democratic candidates in primaries. But no, they have to circle back to Russia. Is it just because it's just something that reflexively people expect? I mean, given the pedigree of Russiagate in 2016 and in 2020?
Well, you know, in Russia, we have a joke. A boss tells his subordinate. The subordinate says, I want you to do it the best way. And the boss says, don't do it the best way. Do it the usual way, you know. Do it as it should be done usually. So why invent anything new, you know? This is the third election which is dominated by this theme of Russian meddling. And we have the same headlines, the same people. I mean, if these journalists from the New York Times who bought Pulitzer Prizes for exposing collusion between Trump and Russia during the electoral campaign, despite the fact that Mueller, you know, that prosecutor, let me remind you of him, despite the fact that he specifically said there was no collusion, these people never returned their prizes, you know. So why invent anything new if you can do it with impunity again, you know? And if that's what the boss wants, you know, don't do it the best way, do it the usual way. And how they do it, you know, let me quote Bloomberg. Russia's efforts to influence the U.S. elections are more sophisticated than in the past cycles. An anonymous U.S. intelligence official said, warning the country's activities go well beyond an alleged plot revealed by a Justice Department. You know, there is nothing here that proves what this official says. We don't know him, so the journalist could just take it from the ceiling. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't think we ever will. I'm not sure it's going to go any further. George, you know, we keep going back to the dates of 2016, 2020, and 2024. George, these are the same dates where the Democratic primary was rigged. Okay, there seems to be a very interesting parallel with Democratic politics being rigged and Russiagate. Go ahead.
Absolutely right. I mean, in 2016, 2020, 2024, the Democrats rigged the process and essentially cheated the voters out of any real choice. But you know, what they're doing this time is attempting to discredit all of Trump's supporters and, by implication, Trump himself. So they've done this, you know, and they've gone right away with this. So somehow, all these internet influencers, they're all very right wing, which they're not really. And they're all great Trump supporters, which is, again, you know, a mixed bag. And so by implication, they want to suggest that Trump was somehow involved in all this. But why I was suggesting that there may be, this may be a deep state operation is that, first of all, there's an awful lot of money that is splashing around here, and you'd have to think if really they suspect that Russia was involved, they would have known very, very early on that Russia was wiring a great deal of money to the United States. But apparently this has been going on for a year. But also this is part of the modus operandi which we knew from Russiagate. And both instances of Russiagate is that there's what deep state operations. I mean, if you're just going back to Russiagate 2.0, remember how that turned around is that this was the Hunter Biden laptop, which the FBI had since 2019, and then used that to go to the social media companies and say, oh, there's a Russia operation that is ongoing. They're going to use you in order to interfere in the election. And of course, all the social, we don't want to be part of any Russia operation. So then there was nothing in it. There was a guy in Delaware, a computer store owner, who had the computer. He gave it to the FBI. Russia didn't appear anywhere, and it was the intelligence agencies, security agencies that came up with the story that somehow Russia was involved in this, and then of course that morphed into that letter signed by 51 former intelligence officials saying, "Oh, this is all the earmarks of a Russian intelligence operation."
I wonder, George, of the 51 that signed that letter then with Anthony Blinken, which was leading the entire effort. Dima, how are Russians reacting to this? I mean, Russia really has an enormous influence over American politics. I mean, then how did Joe Biden get elected if Russia can choose? It doesn't make any sense at all.
Russians get bored very quickly, you know. That probably makes us different from, I don't know, some other nations, because it's really boring. I mean, it doesn't sell in the media here. I mean, I could do a dozen stories every day, you know, very different from each other, how in the United States they present us as influencing the election. But this is an old story. I mean, people are tired here. They would rather read something about the stars, about mundane life, you know. So strangely, it's not a story that is selling well here. But, you know, there's one thing. When the Skripal affair started, a Russian diplomat told me, "I think this story is going to peter out because they have no facts, you know." And I told him, "You're absolutely wrong. Modern media can exist without facts."
All right, right. Speaking of facts, before we go to the break here, George, I sent you a link last night, and okay, everybody, it was from Zero Head, so you know, you had your bets if you want. But you know, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence claims, and I looked at the document, I don't know if it's true or not, does not observe any foreign influence in the 2024. That's, I mean, what's going on in the Biden administration here? I mean, the DOJ makes this claim, and the office that is actually supposed to be looking at this says the opposite. What do you make of it?
I think that they had the script already written about the Russian interference, but they haven't actually managed to fill in the blanks. I mean, in that document, they do bring up RT and the malign influence of RT, even though at the beginning of this this report, they say that they have seen no influence of any foreign. It's a peculiar kind of passing of words on foreign interference in the conduct of the elections. So it's hard to know what do they mean by the conduct of the election. I mean, and so maybe they because then they say there's no evidence anyone's interfering in the voting machines and the actual voting process. So it's a confusing document. You can read it one way or another, yeah. But they even in that document they do say that, well, RTs are really very dangerous, absolutely, you know.
Hard for the course. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a quick break, and after that break we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. Let me go back to George in Budapest. There's a different angle to what's been going on, how Russia is in the news, and that is something that President Vladimir Putin said in an economic conference in Vladivostok. Traditionally, let's go back to 2016, the epicenter of all of this, Russian officialdom has basically been standoffish about their preferences, okay? You know, they'll deal with whoever is elected and is inaugurated in January. They don't want to get involved in the internal affairs of another country. We've heard this mantra many times. But in this cycle, we heard something slightly different, that, you know, the president was asked, you know, do you support Trump or Biden? You know, and, you know, we like predictability. We go with the Democrats, which can be debated. OK. And since Biden was cooed by his own party out of the primary, we have Kamala Harris, and he was asked about, do you support Kamala Harris? And essentially paraphrasing, yes. And he also made a comment about her laugh. He did not use the word chuckle, laugh. Go ahead, George.
Yes. Well, we'd have to conclude that Putin was having fun at the expense of Americans, who every 4 years are absolutely obsessed with Russian interference in the U.S. elections and whom the Russians prefer to win. But it's a little surprising, or maybe not so surprising. I mean, the Russians were clearly disappointed in Trump in 2016. I think they had great hopes on him. They thought he was somebody outside the sort of the foreign policy establishment, that they saw him as a businessman, a pragmatist, somebody who likes to make deals. And they saw somebody that he's just going to abandon the Cold War obsessions, the Russophobia, and he'd be more interested in making deals. They were disappointed that Trump didn't have the strength, or didn't have the ability to overcome the resistance within the government to any improvement in Russian relations. And as a result, relations really deteriorated drastically during the Trump years. Of course, they went on deteriorating under Biden. But nonetheless, they've kind of given up on Trump. They have no real expectations that anything much will improve under Trump. But what was surprising about Putin's comments by saying somehow, well, he prefers the Democrats because the Democrats are predictable, in that that's not really the history of the Cold War. I mean, if one thinks of the good relations and the bad relations between Russia and the United States, well, it was precisely when the Democrats were in power that the relations were at their worst. I mean, under Truman, the Cold War really kicked in. We had the Berlin crisis, we had the war in Korea. Then, of course, under Kennedy, the United States and the Soviet Union almost came to war over Cuba. Again, and under Jimmy Carter, again, very drastic deterioration to the point when the United States boycotted the Moscow Olympics. Whereas under Republicans, those were the heroes of detente. We had the first real detente under Eisenhower, the spirit of Camp David, and of course, the heyday of detente under Nixon. And then, of course, you had the Reagan-Gorbachev era of the late 1980s. So it's strange for Putin, who after all knows his history, to suggest that somehow, well, that he prefers dealing with the Democrats. That's not the history that over here is goes for.
That's why, you know, Dima, I think that this is kind of poking, you know, the very popular phrase, don't poke the bear. But I mean, I don't know what the Americans are, but they're being poked right now. And I think it's in a very kind of jocular way. I mean, if you're going to drag us into this election again against our will, we'll comment on it. It's reverse psychology, I think.
I think Putin was not trolling. He was satirizing the situation because it's indeed funny. It's absurd. Yeah. It's dangerous, but it's also funny and absurd. The ideology which is now guiding the Democratic Party is totalitarian. And in that sense, it is predictable. But it doesn't make it good. So Putin understood that the Democrats would expect him, you know, to support Trump, to endorse Trump. That would be a huge boon for them from Putin. And he didn't give them that boon, you know. He pretended, to be for Kamala Harris. Again, this story about the cycles of Russian-American relations, they're very much like football statistics, you know. For the believers, they mean everything, you know. For the non-believers, they don't mean anything. Some people, including, for example, Vyacheslav Nikanov in Russia, they partially agree with George, with what George had to say, you know, and the Democrats' relations were bad and the Republicans better. But there are also other cycles. Usually in the beginning of a new presidential term, there are always hopes on both sides. So relations were relatively good in the beginning of Carter administration, right? You know, arms reduction treaties. They were bad in the end. Afghanistan, boycott of the Olympics in Moscow. They were relatively good in the beginning of Obama administration. They were awful in the end of Obama administration. Even under Biden, you know, there was a glimpse of hope. You remember that summit in Geneva. So again, Biden also wanted to repeat the same trajectory, and he repeated it, but in a disastrous, you know, tragic way. Now the relations are dangerously bad. So
I don't know if we'll ever know.
He was satirizing this ideology. He was not poking fun at Kamala Harris personally. You know, the tragedy is not in her. You know, the tragedy is in the ideology guiding the United States.
Yeah, but also, Dima, I agree with you in principle, but George, Trump reportedly is very offended by the Putin's endorsement. And I think that given what you just said, George, is that it's kind of returning the favor. We had, maybe we had some hopes for you, but you ended up being probably the worst for U.S.-Russia relations since the end of the Cold War. So maybe it was just kind of a backhanded way of demonstrating the displeasure. Obviously, the Russian political elite, at the end of the day, knows the next president is going to be more or less the same as the current one. Go ahead, George.
I think you're absolutely right, Peter. I think Trump does seem hurt by this because,
yeah, he
because his shtick has been that, well, he had very good relations with Putin and he will bring this war to an end really within 24 hours because he had very good relations with Putin. He said, well, he always says, yeah, I was the toughest on Russia than any president has ever been. But on the other hand, you know, Putin respects me and Putin, is ready to deal with me. So I think Putin's saying, yeah, we prefer Harris, hurts him. And in a way, it does kind of undercut his position that he's the master deal maker who can just sort of wrap things up very quickly. But I think Dima is right in saying that this has made the case of the Democrats a little harder because they were hoping, and of course all the media still, with Russiagate, they were still insisting absolutely blindly that the Russians are supporting Trump, even though they can't cite any evidence, but no, Russians absolutely are supporting Trump. So I think they were hoping that Putin will again do something like 2016. Trump, he's a very colorful character. He's somebody who's very interesting and exciting. But instead, no. Biden has told his supporters to support Harris, and we're following Biden's lead. It's very funny. But I do think that he's kind of confused Americans. They don't quite know now what to do with. Democrats are confused.
I think that's the intent. But Dima, again, this may be a reach here, but obviously, I think it's assumed that Kamala Harris would continue the Biden administration's policy vis-a-vis Ukraine. And maybe that is the message that is being sent too. That if Kamala Harris is president, we know what your policy is going to be, and it's very clear how we're going to move forward. That might be kind of a subliminal. What do you think?
I think the policy conducted by Biden on the Ukrainian conflict is extremely dangerous, and it's unacceptable. So I don't think anyone in Russia can sincerely say, we can predict the actions of Kamala because we have seen what has been going on for 2 years, so we want that to continue. No, that's not the message from Russia, definitely. But the problem is that the Democrats with their totalitarian ideology, for them, the roles are very clear cut. So you remember when Trump met Putin in Helsinki in 2018, soon after his victory, I remember how the mainstream media in the United States was at a loss. What should Trump tell Putin? He should tell Putin not to interfere in American elections. He should scold Putin for helping him to win. So basically, the message from Trump had to be something like, first, stop telling me that I won. Second, don't help me win again. Third, don't do it again, don't help me again. So, of course, Trump was not going to say that. It was absurd to expect Trump to say that, but the media kept repeating, no, he absolutely has to say this, not anything else. So the same
thing. Okay, we're rapidly running out of time. Slightly different here. AOC came out and attacked Jill Stein, and this is the same time that Kamala Harris has very weak support in a lot of the battleground states here. We have Russiagate 3.0 introduced. We also have, the attacks on Jill Stein again. Of course, another Kremlin agent here. I mean, this shows, Russiagate has always been about desperation. But I think, this tactic of going after compromising people's integrity, this is all very focused right now. And it shows that the campaign of joy isn't doing so well. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely right. I think that's what they're doing in the case of Jill Stein. This is an old trope that they've used against her time and time again. And obviously they are concerned about Harris's numbers, which are very weak. And it's a way of discrediting views that that you don't like. So any views that are in favor of peace, any views that are suggesting that it doesn't make a lot of sense to have to be on a warlike footing with a nuclear superpower, anything that says that, oh, you're just repeating Putin's talking points. These are Russia-fed lines, and that it's just a way of discrediting. And I think that's why Russiagate 3.0 is dangerous, as previous iterations of Russiagate were. Yeah, you're discrediting, delegitimizing real serious criticism.
But it's always useful as a political tool. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Rostock rules.